This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 175. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-8816-7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So welcome to the show, Garrett and Berners. You are together at last.
We certainly are. We certainly are. We've had a couple of days together. Nice little romantic break at Millfield School, and all's good.
We've been hanging out in the bubble for a little while, so it's quite nice. It's about 30 degrees in there. Tropical training down here in the West Country.
Really, just you can sweat out all those. Cakes that you've been enjoying the teas over the summer.
Yeah, we're going to do a little profile of it later on, so for anyone listening out there, there'll be something online where you can have a little look at this this great revelation down here, which is the cricket bubble. It's got to be seen to be believed, really. It's phenomenal. So hopefully a little insight into what goes on down here.
So what have you two been up to? You've been improving the bubble even more, have you?
Well, we have, yeah. We've been putting in the pitch vision system into one of the lanes. And also we're putting together a wish list, which we're going to update the lane with as well, to really maximise the impact of pitch vision at the school.
Okay. And how do you see pitch vision working in that environment?
Well, I think it's going to be, I mean, every lesson that that I'll be doing with the players that are on scholarships will be on there. And the first starting point will be doing some testing, really, and doing some identification of talent, but also testing the skills of the ones that we already know about as well. And that will form a really good part of our profiling, which will then inform our programme that we put together for each player over the course of a year. So an example being that we'll get a fast bowler bowling on it, pick up a whole heap of information, get him doing some skills tests. And then over the course of a year, we can actually assess whether the programme we're putting in place is impacting positively on his pace, his accuracy and his ability to deviate the ball as well. So it gives us measurements throughout the year. And we'll probably test, I should imagine, twice every term, once at the beginning of term and once at the end, but also use the system throughout just to keep back that sort of basic monitoring, that day-to-day monitoring going. And it gives the guys a visual, it gives them some feedback during every session that they'll be having. And most players that we've got on scholarships here will be having 4 or 5 sessions a week.
Yeah, well, we as a pitch vision podcast, we really do love pitch vision, so highly recommended to anyone who's listening to get your hands on the system and start using it in the way that Gareth has been talking about.
We've also should mention that we're just launching our drill section, aren't we, where we're talking a little bit about how pitch vision can be used in some very specific training, everyday training, which can be transferred onto the pitch vision system and can, you know, provide us with that notion objectively of what's actually going on. So maybe you'll let our listeners know exactly where they can find that at the end of the show.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes. If you head over to pitchvision.com, you can find it all there. But I'll put the links in the show notes. First one is all about Yorkers, which, of course, is a very powerful skill to have in these days of 2020 cricket, where you can make your millions by being good at bowling Yorkers at pace.
Run and be toe cruncher.
Exactly, yeah. We got some follow-up from last week as well. The Paul's question, if you remember, we were talking about changing the training culture in a club side where people just kind of rock up a bit and go through the motions. And Paul sent us an email to say thanks very much for the advice and also to talk a little bit about what he's going to do. And he said that what he would do is convince the captain by trying that trick of saying, just give me 3 weeks and see how it goes. And then building in a little bit of competitive spirit by breaking the squad into smaller groups and giving out a prize for the best one. So it sounds like Paul's got some good ideas there, Gareth.
Yeah, well, I'd be really intrigued after that 3 weeks to get his feedback, and because that, you know, as we talked about last week, there'll be people in very similar situations to Paul around the cricketing world, working within clubs, and particularly at this stage of the year, isn't it? You know, when a side isn't maybe competing for, at the top end of a competition or a league structure, that the motivation can go. And there's only going to be three or four sides in each league, if that, that are competing at the top end. So if a bit of motivation and a bit of competition and trying something for 3 weeks works for Paul, it could work for many others.
I think food and beer works well for many club players. So I see that he was actually offering a reward. Well, rewards work quite well, don't they? Because people often like to have a feeling that they're getting something for their hard, laborious work. So that might be quite interesting on the bar as well.
Yeah,
extrinsic motivation at its very best.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that you do have to be careful what kind of what kind of motivation you give, because that giving out prizes can work out quite expensive if you do it all the time. So yeah, the ultimate aim is to get people self motivated, isn't it?
That's where you're looking to get, but you know, you need stepping stones along the way, really. And there's lots of different ways of doing it, but I completely agree. Ultimately, you want the athlete, the player, to be driven in their own right and actually create their own culture, which then bleeds out all over the other people within the group.
Well, we got a special edition of the Yes No Round. It's live from Epsom College. We've got some of the boys from CCM Academy who are playing a match here against In Touch Cricket Academy, and they're going to do the Yes No Round. Boys, you've not heard the rules of the Yes No Round before, but the only rule is that you're only allowed to say yes or no to each of these questions. So you're going to answer these in turn. Just say yes or no. Here we go. Success comes from determination and not talent.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Parents are bad coaches.
No.
No.
Yes.
No.
And the last question. Loving the game is more important than winning matches.
Yes.
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 Yep.
Thank you, gentlemen, and good luck for the rest of the tournament. Okay, we're going to head into the question section now, and of course, we have a couple of questions every week which has the chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Bernard, what questions have you had this week that we can ponder over?
Got a first question from Venkat Rao. He's watched a bit of cricket on TV, and he's wondering why the batsmen tend to tap the pitch a lot. You often see this in between deliveries and in between overs. So I guess that a lot of us probably know the answer, but maybe an expert opinion.
Well, but me personally, I have no idea why. I think it's just a nervous tick more than anything else. I mean, you're not going to make a huge amount of difference to the pitch if you dig away at it. It just maybe gives you something to do while you're waiting for the bowler to get back to his mark. Gareth, are you... do you know any more about this tick that batsmen have?
Well, I think ultimately it came from people playing on uncovered wickets, which is not probably unfamiliar to many people that listen to this to this show, that haven't got the luxury of having covers as they have in professional grounds and at the Premier League grounds around the world and all of that. Because back in the day in county cricket, when it was played on uncovered wickets, particularly after rain or particularly when it had been through a dry period, the wickets would break up or divot. So players would go down and repair the wicket or just keep it under wraps so they have a more consistent bounce. And I think a lot of it stems from there, and not necessarily nowadays where we don't have uncovered wickets as much in world cricket. But I think the tradition and the, you know, we grow up watching people do things on television and we talk about role modelling, and there's a conscious role modelling and then a subconscious role modelling. And I think it's almost a subconscious thing that batters do, having watched players over the years. You know, so the last generation, which was on covered wickets, was informed by the previous generation, which wasn't on covered wickets. And it's just something that's crept in. It's a bit like walking in as a fielder. You know, why do we do that? There's no actual physiological reason why we do that, but we do because it's always been done. And I just think it's that role modelling thing of cricket down the ages, which has impacted upon the way that people subconsciously do things. So, yes, it probably does help within a rhythm. But I would say it's just one of those things within cricket. It's such a traditional game. It goes back 200 plus years. And there's a lot of things that probably started a long, long time ago that we do that we don't really understand why we do it. It's just part of a game. The thing I would say is it doesn't really negate performance or doesn't appear to negate performance. So it's not something that we need to get out of because it's getting in the way. It's not fatiguing us. It's not taking any concentration because it is something that is subconscious and it's something that's almost habitual.
As a left-hand batsman playing in, you know, amateur cricket as well, you often get that the cause where or scenario where you've got a right arm over bowler that's been bowling all game long. If you're the team batting second, and say, for example, the umpires aren't quite as proficient as you would like them to be, and they've been running in on the danger zone for the best part of 50 overs, you've suddenly got an absolute track of, you know, mud and debris right in front of you as a left-hand bowler that's just about on a good length. So if you've got something in your hands which can kind of scrape or pat or do anything to that area, I find myself quite busy in that area these days, actually, just repairing what's been left over due to people not knowing the rules. So I guess you have a bat in your hand as well. And the natural kind of thing to do with something in your hand is to either wave it about or bang it on the floor or do something. It's a bit like baseball players. You watch them, they pick it up and down a lot, don't they? And they don't just stand there with it in their hand. They're always doing something, either swinging it around, it's on their shoulder. Tennis players as well, as they get into position, they rock from side to side and they bang their shoes. And, you know, you wonder, why is he banging his shoes? There can't be any dirt on his shoes. It's just because that's his rhythm. That's what he's done since he's played the game.
Yeah, I'd love to know if it makes any difference, if the stuff that you're doing actually makes any difference, because I do have a little laugh to myself when I see a batsman walk halfway down the pitch and see the tiniest speck of earth or mud and just flick it off and then walk back again. I always think to myself, did you really need to do that?
It's probably very highly unlikely the ball would land there, but it's just, you know, psychologically, you're probably, you get into your batting position and you think, yes, but if.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like you see like a leaf on the pitch, you know, and you stop everything and all the slips sigh and the keeper calls you X, Y, Z and the bowler's furious. But if you get out, you think, and I didn't move that leaf off the pitch, you're livid with yourself. And I think it's more the psycho, you know, part of the game that you want to have almost a clear conscience as the bowler's running in. And if there are things that are going to alter that, then, you know, you look at Cook and Trott, you know, they've got this kind of regimented things that they do in between balls. And I know I heard someone say the other day that people stick a short leg in against Cook just to avoid him from, if you watch him when he plays, he walks off the square leg every ball. And if you put a square leg, square leg in there, he has to walk around the square leg, just breaking up his pattern, you know, just breaking up what he's just trying something just to disturb him, just to make him do something different when he settles into his position again. And there is a little bit to it, I think, that side of it.
Yeah, it depends on the personality of the batsman as well. But yeah, you can't, you know, if you can do something to put the batsman off his rhythm slightly, then, you know, it might make a difference. I had the perfect excuse. I don't know if that's the word, but yeah, I had the perfect distraction on Saturday playing in my club game. There's a train line behind the bowler's arm at one end of the pitch I was playing, and as the bowler was running in, I saw just in the corner of my eye a train was coming along as well, and I thought, oh, it'll be fine. And he took my off stump out of the ground, played forward to block it, and as he bowled, the train went by, and I just completely missed it. So I'm going to blame the train there rather than my eyesight.
Should have given it the old ticket,
stepped
please.
Away. Yeah, should have stepped away, really, should I? And as I was walking off, the captain, who many years experience, Gareth, you may know of him or know him, John Derrick.
Yes, I know John Derrick very well.
Yeah, okay, yeah, well, with many years experience, he just said loud enough so I could hear, always wait for the train to go by.
Good JD.
Yeah, he's still playing, still plonks himself at first slip and watches proceedings.
Is he bowling his little medium paces still or not?
Not very often, only when they're really in trouble.
Yeah.
Does he bring himself on to just swing it away, swing a couple away, and then swing it back in? Wrap you on the pads. Thanks for coming.
He's a good man, JD, a top bloke.
He's involved with Glamorgan, isn't he?
He's one of the officers there. So involved with the Wales, actually. Wales cricket.
Yeah, cricket Wales. Yeah.
So he was down here the other week. We had Wales under 17s playing a game against Millfield, and he was down for that time. And it was good to see him. He's a top man. He was in charge of the second team a long time ago when I was playing second team cricket, and then had a brief stint with the first 11. But he's one of those fellas that has been constantly involved in Welsh cricket, and I should imagine will always be involved in Welsh cricket.
Oh yeah, he's never going to retire, is he? He'll carry on forever, I think. He's just one of those people that make the game tick by just, you know, continuing to play, continuing to coach, and continuing to have a passion for the game. But that's a long way from tapping the pitch. So let's head for the next question, Berners.
Okay, the next question's from Sidanth. His question is about playing in competitions. They've just started with the new season, and he's just wondering which kind of approach would be more productive and helpful. Should he take it one game at a time, or should they look at the kind of competition as a whole and plan strategies as to what they want to do beforehand?
Well, I'm a big fan of having your team strategy in place before the start of the season. So assuming that the format of the competition is going to be consistent throughout, I think you can look at your own strengths and development areas and come up with a plan based on how you would like to play your cricket, who bowls in what periods of the game, you know, when you want to deploy certain batters, where we want our best fielders to be. Those sort of things, you know, are part of how you play your cricket. So you get those in place at the beginning of the season, and you review them periodically as you go through to see whether they need tweaking. Then obviously you've got your game-to-game thing, because things do change, you know, pitches change, conditions change. But ultimately your plan that you start off the season, if it's a good plan and you've done it properly, you've reflected properly and you've been honest, then your plan's not going to differ too much, and you're probably going to veer 5 or 10% either way for any specific game situation or any specific opponent or venue. So I'm a big fan of having it in place to start off with, to gear your practice around it, to gear your thought processes around it. But yeah, take each game one at a time as you're going through the season is massively important, because we can get sidetracked by being in really good form and we're playing well, and all of a sudden you lose a game because you've lost focus of what actually has won you those games in the past. And equally, you know, you can lose a couple of games and get too down. So I'm a big one for taking each game at a time, but it's got to be underpinned by having a foundation of a plan of how you're going to attack that competition and how you're going to use your people the best throughout that competition.
It's a little bit like the way I think about it. It's if you're doing your batting practice and you're working on some particular point of technique, you work hard on that and you think about that when you're practicing. But then when you actually go and play the game, you just put that out of your mind and just watch the ball and react to the ball and stop thinking about particular technical points. And that's the similar way that I see it. You know, that you have your plan, you have your overall plan, like you said, Gareth. But then when you go out to play the game, you play the game on that particular, you know, you just watch the ball, you just play one ball at a time, and you carry on naturally is probably the wrong word, but you have that plan ingrained in you, so you don't really have to think about it too much. You just go out and do it. But I was also thinking about how often you review that. If things are going wrong, how quickly do you think to yourself, right, we're going to have to change the plan, or is this just a blip? You look at the England team recently, and they haven't performed particularly well in Test cricket this year. They haven't changed their plan much, apart from recently they went to four seam bowlers. But they stuck with the six batsmen and the wicketkeeper and the four bowlers. So how much would you say, Gareth, do you stick to a plan if it's not working? And how quickly would you look to change that? What's your view on that?
Well, I mean, I think in the England case, that their recipe is a good one. They probably veered off of it a little bit. And I don't mean when I say veered off picking four seamers as opposed to having three and Swanee bowling spin. I'm talking about the processes that they've had, which have been so successful, which got them to number one, which got them playing the best test cricket in my time. As watching Test cricket and being an England fan, they've probably gone away from that a little bit, and they need to reconnect. So I'm not a massive fan of changing a plan unless you're doing your processes that you've asked your players to do really well and then end up losing on a consistent basis. Then your plan in the first place probably was a bit flawed or a bit short-sighted. I often think that people get disconnected from their plans. So I can give you an example of our school season this year and teams that I've coached in the past and Somerset and within England. We would regularly review how we're going against that plan. So I can remember years ago, one of our plans for Test cricket with England was to score 400 in the first innings and bat for 120 overs in order to do that. So I would keep a tally of how successful we were and also what the opposition was doing, whether they were meeting our KPIs and what effect that was having on the results of games. And we would be doing that, you know, at least once a series with England. So if you're playing a four-match series or a three-match series, you'd definitely have a review after Test match two just to see how you're going. And if you're going well and you're scoring those 400s and you're putting the side under pressure, then you can say, right, keep doing it. Keep doing this sort of thing. Or if you're not, if you're only batting for 100 overs in an innings, you know, which makes it very difficult to score 400 in the first innings of a game, then we've got to look at how we can extend our innings for another 20 overs to give ourselves the best chance of success. So changing plans, I'm not a fan of, because if you're changing a plan, it means the first one that you came up with was not on the mark. I'd only change a plan if you're hitting your KPIs and still not winning.
It's funny how perception can alter as well. I've got an example from my own side where we looked at the results, our home results, and we hadn't lost a game batting second for over 2 years. And we'd only drawn two of those games and the rest we'd won. So our strategy, which had sort of just evolved generally, was to bowl first, bowl the side out fairly cheaply and then knock them off. And then this season, because it went wrong a couple of times early in the season, we abandoned it almost straight away. And the captain saying, we're not a good chasing side. So you look at the history, and OK, you know, teams change from season to season. But you look at the history of us playing at home and you say, well, hang on a minute. You know, we just don't lose games chasing and we don't even draw games chasing. We win games chasing most of the time. And a couple of bad results and that's skews your opinion, and suddenly you say to yourself, well, we're going to have to bat first and score 250 every week to be in with a chance of winning.
Instead of looking at what were the reasons why you were so successful for 2 years and what were the consistencies in that, and then trying to put those back in place, because if you put those back in place, you continue to win.
Bonus, what's your club's plan and how's it been going?
A lot of that's based on the toss, I think. We don't win many tosses, and their plan is to do what you just said, actually. But yeah, I don't know. To be perfectly honest with you, I this is brutally honest. I don't think we really have a plan. Certainly in the second team, I think there isn't really a lot of thought that goes into it. We just kind of, it's very much played on the day. It's all about the you know, being up for it on the day and playing the conditions, and that whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I'd just probably call it very quite unprofessional in the way we go about it. I've been lucky enough to be in a couple of key environments of England and Kolkata Knight Riders and Worcestershire, and you watch what those guys do. You know, like what Gareth just said, they have very clear, decisive plans that they know if those plans are executed by their bowlers, by their batsmen, they will 9 times out of 10 win that game. And I would say that our plan is to kind of go out and everyone kind of does their best, if that makes sense. I'm sure a lot of club cricketers can kind of relate to that. But maybe in the first team, there's a bit more, you know, thinking behind it. But certainly in the second team, I can't honestly say that we sit down and talk about how we're going to win the league at the start of the season and how we're going to win certain games before we play them. So Yeah, it is an interesting topic of conversation. I think it's a bit like the rolling scale of level as well. You know, you apply however much theory to what's at the end of the rainbow, I guess.
So can you overplan, do you think, Gareth? I mean, we're talking about, say, a second team, a club second team. It isn't necessarily, you know, they're going to have a lot of time to sit down and have meetings and reviews and things like that. Can you overplan in a situation like that?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. You can overplan. And I think the best plans are the most simple ones, because ultimately they stay fresh in the mind, that they're easy to recall. And you know, an example being the KPI to score 400 in the first innings of a test match. It's an easy one to remember. It's an easy one to have in the forefront of your mind when you're practicing. It's an easy one for conversations to kick off about. You know, it's like bowling X amount of maidens. It's an easy, you know, they're easy things to do. And I don't care whether you're a test team or a third 11 at a cricket club. If you choose one or two things that are your KPIs and the things that you hang your hat on and you're proud about, then there's no way that that is going to negate your performance. If you start saying, all right, we need to attack the first ball of every over and we need to, you know, you start breaking it down like that, then they're easy things to forget, or they're easy things to cloud your mind and become distractions. So the most simple plans are often the best. And I would encourage any environment to pick out two or three KPIs and see if you can live by them, because if you live by them, then there's a good chance that your performance is going to take an upward shift.
Of course, a lot of the information you need to make these decisions as well is based around analysis, isn't it? You know, when you talk about figures of first batting inning scores and number of maiden overs and, you know, what time of the game are we going to attack and defend, you can only really make those decisions off of some bare facts. If you don't have that data and that knowledge, quite hard to do as well, I would guess. If you don't know what the average par score was that you scored, say, the season before and won, what are you basing it all on? So having those numbers is critically important as well, I think.
And just to go back, I mean, at club cricket 3 years ago with the club side that I played for, we did a bit of basic analysis, and it was literally go over the scorecards, what was a winning score batting first in at home, and we worked out that if you got 180, then you had an 80% chance of winning that game of cricket. Yeah. So we would aim to get to 180. We were playing 45 over cricket at the time. We'd aim to get to 180 off 40 overs, which, you know, isn't particularly onerous, and then end up with 240 or 230 or whatever, and the game would be over at tea time, effectively, as long as we got somewhere near executing our plans. But I mean, it was a really basic one for us to go off of, and we knew that if we controlled ourselves to get to 180, then even if we only got 189, which we got in one game, I remember, we were still nine over par. And we had the confidence, if we just executed our plans, which was to get the two spinners on as early as we possibly could do to get our people in the key positions, then somebody on the opposition was going to have to bat bloody well to win that game of cricket.
Fantastic film, Moneyball. I think I've said it a few times now, but
Baby, yeah, I've seen that now. Yeah,
and for anyone who wants to know about, you know, strategy and analysis, this film Moneyball is all about numbers, figures, and getting the right men in to do the job required. So looking at which batting hitters had the correct average that would be able to attain the desired results. And it goes through the season, and they basically find their strength and depth in the players that they've recruited that can activate plans that they've set. And it's as simple as that. And it's quite intriguing because it's very, very true. And probably I would imagine that a lot of 2020 teams do very similar things to what they do in that particular film.
Yeah, they do exactly that. They work out what the key things are behind that format of the game, you know. And 2020 is probably the most analysed format, as a result, I think the quality that we've seen, I thought the IPL this year, there was some really good quality in it, which I know came out of analysis, because the two of the four sides that ended up in the playoffs invested heavily in their analysis this year in comparison with previous years, and the reap the rewards as a consequence.
All right, we're going to have our soapbox for the week, the chance for one of the member of the team to come up with 60 seconds of a rant or a praise or a grumble or something else that's on their mind. And you only get a minute but no one gets to interrupt. So, Gareth, over to you.
We all love our game of cricket, and there's a lot of kids and a lot of people that have got aspirations to play in international cricket and to make lots of money in the IPL and all of that sort of thing. So they put all of their eggs in one basket, which is their cricket, and just practice their cricket and just do fitness, which is associated with the cricket. But I'm a massive fan of youngsters playing multi-sports and getting as much experience in playing rugby, football, swimming, netball, whatever the case may be, because ultimately the skills and the movement patterns are all very, very transferable between the sports and then back into cricket. An example being the South African cricket side. If you watch them play touch rugby or you watch them move around, they're very, very quick on their feet, and it's all because they've all played different sports growing up rather than just specialising in one. So you can specialise in your gymnastics if you want to be an Olympic gymnast, you know, by the age of 15. But in cricket, I want you to stay in the multi-sports for as long as you possibly can until you specialise at 16 to 18.
That's all we've got time for on this week's show. But before we leave, we've got our normal little bits of housekeeping to do, the main one being our competition winner for the week. So we hand Gareth two questions this week, and one of those questions wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, which question did you prefer this week? Tapping the pitch or long or short view on strategy?
Well, interesting one, actually, because I thought the strategic one would get my vote when I first looked at the questions when they came through. However, Venkat's question on tapping the pitch actually got us into some very interesting areas. So I'm going to go with that one. A bit of a surprise one this week for me, but I'm going to go with the question about tapping the pitch with the bat.
Yeah, I like those left field questions. Sometimes they take us down very strange little alleyways, don't they? And it's a little bit more fun down there. So, yeah, well done, Venkat. You are a worthy winner this week. Now, if you want to send in your own question to the show, then you can do so. And Berners, what's the way that someone can send in a question and have their chance to win a prize?
So give us a call on the old telephone. It's 02088 167 691, or we've got a bit of electronic mail with the email, and that's coach@pitchvision.com.
It is. You can also contact us through Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. And you can get us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to the show every week and get the wise words from the three, perhaps not so wise men, certainly not in my case, then you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. And if you head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You can find us in there. Click on subscribe and leave a review if you like us. If you don't like us, then why you listen to the show in the first place. If you want to subscribe in any other way, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at the top of the page, and you've got all the details on how to subscribe using our very clever RSS feed. So that's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bernice.